Producer Nick here with a quick note before we start. This episode was recorded live at Podcast Live this weekend, and as you'll be able to hear, Joe instructs me at various points to make edits. Sadly, we're currently rolling without a sponsor, and as such, I don't have the time or inclination to follow through with Joe's requests. So I've intentionally left them in as a reminder to you or the great organization that you possibly have fund awarding responsibilities for. That could be yours. If you email me at nick@podopods.com, that's podopods.com, and help bring polling politics to the masses. Anyway, here's the episode.
The Conservatives are the largest party. They don't have an overall majority at this stage. The Prime Minister called this election because she wanted certainty and stability.
Hello and welcome to Polling Politics. We're here at the Podcast Live event in central London. I'm Joe Twyman, pollster from Delta Poll.
I'm author and journalist Marie Leconte.
We would love you to enjoy this podcast. We are less interested in you enjoying the other podcasts that are taking place today. Polling Politics is the podcast where Marie and I round up the key political stories and statistics that are full of... mistakes straight off. It's a good start.
It's very early in the morning.
It's a good start. Polling Politics is the podcast where Marie and I round up the... Usually this takes around 4 hours to record, so I'm just worrying about time, but we'll make it through. We'll just cut out the dance routine at the end. Polling Politics is the podcast where Marie and I round up the key political stories and statistics that are swirling around at the moment, and we're also joined by guests from the world of politics to delve into polling and public opinion in more detail. Our guest for this special episode is political comedian Alex Keeley. Hello, Alex.
Hi.
Alex reached the final of the prestigious So You Think You're Funny competition.
Yeah, the most passive-aggressive named competition in all of comedy, so that's good.
And his performance in Edinburgh this summer made The Guardian's top 10 jokes of the Edinburgh Fringe.
And The Telegraph, so I can unite the toxic political situation in this country with the quality of my gags.
Big hello. What was the winning joke?
Oh, I mean,
it's a complete lie.
Yeah. So it's like that you email the jokes in before the month has started, and then the journalists select which are the best ones without having ever seen them on stage, and the joke doesn't work on stage. So that's good. So,
well, you heard it here first, folks.
It's
been quite a week in politics. The polls, as we know, have been relatively static. The Socialist Party has been consistently ahead of the Social Democrats. Marie, Alex, who do you think is going to win tomorrow's Portuguese election? I'm going to throw that to the audience. Would anyone in the audience like to offer an opinion on the Portuguese election?
Man
here. Do we have a roving mic? He said, hopefully, in an aspirational way.
We're not being an aficionado on Portuguese politics, but I'd say probably the party with the most votes.
Congratulations. You may now go on the BBC News Channel to talk about this. Rather than the Portuguese election, we're going to cover the recent developments in British politics. There are three stages to today's what we're characterizing as the shit show or the shit show, depending on how it goes. We're going to look at the conference season, specifically the shit show surrounding the the shit show surrounding the Labour conference, the shit show surrounding the Conservative conference, and then the whole shit show surrounding going to have to abandon that, aren't we? More content needed. And then the shit show surrounding
clusterfuck.
It might not get through the Apple sensors. The shit show surrounding Brexit. But I'm going to start with the conference season generally. Marie, what does conference season mean to you?
To me personally, God, so much and yet so little. No, I don't know. I find conference season really interesting because I feel like I need to plug my book at this stage, but I've just written a book that's called Haven't You Heard? That's about the role of political gossip in Westminster, but kind of more generally about the role of the personal, I guess, and personalities and people in politics. And I think conference season is one really... I'm really not a morning person, so I will not be enjoyable. Like, this will not be good for anyone here. Anyway.
That's, don't oversell it.
But, you know, I think conference season is really interesting because for those of you who've never been, who don't really know about it, it is basically sort of like Westminster on Sea. So once a year, we see the Tories and Labour kind of go off to these three-day conferences. And it is kind of, you know, MPs, their advisors, journalists, quite a lot of lobbyists, activists, etc. And crucially, I think all of those people spend those 3 days basically together and kind of, you know, melded together. And I think conference is weird because in a sense, nothing really ever happens there. Because every year you talk to people and they say, well, you know, conference is quite flat this year. There's not much going on. There's never anything going on at conference. Like there's never, in terms of from a journalistic perspective, very, very few stories are ever broken at conference from, you know, kind of, I mean, I guess policies get announced sometimes, but that's basically it. So, yeah, so I think every year sort of going into conference, Westminster goes, you know, what will happen this year? And then not much really happens.
Most people who think about conferences think about it in terms of what they see on TV if they're not political anoraks like us. And so they think it's all about what happens in the conference, in the conference hall with the main speeches. And some of them think there must be really exciting stuff going out on elsewhere. Never really happens. I mean, there's lots of stuff going on elsewhere. It's never exciting. But there is karaoke. Karaoke is a big part of conferences. Alex, what's your karaoke song of choice? If you were going to, and this isn't, this could be part of your routine, but it isn't. This isn't a feeder line for a huge monologue on conference karaoke. If you were going to Labour and Conservative conference, what would be your karaoke song of choice?
I'd suck at karaoke. I'm not.
Hang on a moment.
No?
Do you really think there are people at the Conservative and Labour conference who excel at karaoke?
I don't know.
Because actually there
Tom
are.
Tom Watson belting
a
out
A weird
something.
Amount of them can sing really well. One person, sorry to interrupt, but one of my favourite facts is that one person, I will not name her, who works in politics, trained with a coach for 3 months before conference season because she wanted to be able to sing properly at karaoke there. So that's the level we're dealing with here.
All I can say is if you haven't heard John Pienaar sing his version of Brown Eyed Girl, or there's someone nodding in the audience, you've got a recording of it. Are you actually related to John Pienaar? Oh, right, that's less interesting. No longer interested.
It's not enjoyable to watch someone smash karaoke, though, right? The whole enjoyment is just incompetence.
At the end of the Conservative conference, Richard Jackson, the former advisor to Number 10, always sings "You Raise Me Up" by Westlife or Josh. Anyway, I think there's a version by Westlife. "You Raise Me Up So I Can Rise on Mountains" or something. Anyway, he must be a properly trained operatic singer because he puts in a beautiful, beautiful version that brings tears to the eyes, quite frankly. But then, of course, everyone thinks, well, that's not in the spirit of karaoke.
Yeah. Any Bruce Springsteen is the answer for me.
That's it. Marie?
Any Bruce Springsteen.
Well, my thing, and we've had this conversation before, but so I don't like doing karaoke because I can't sing. And not in that way that people say, oh, you know, I can't sing, no, I won't do it, and then sing really well. Like, I know what I'm good at and what I'm bad at, and what I'm bad at is karaoke. But no, so if I really have to do it, I do "I Bet You Look Good on the Dance Floor," because Alex Turner has no range, and neither do I.
From so the it's Arctic
a very
Monkeys.
Flat, yes, it's a very flat song, so that's fine. That's the only one I can manage.
Gordon Brown, as we know, is a fan of the Arctic Monkeys. I wonder if he sings that. This year at conference, I suggested to Marie that her and I sing "A Whole New World" from Aladdin. And Marie said, "I only know the words in French," as if that would make it worse. I thought that would be brilliant. She then said, "I will punch you in the nuts and run off if you make me do that."
Did, to be fair, someone did try to sign me up and then I physically ran away from the room. So, yeah, no, I was not lying. I did not punch you in the nuts, though. So
the night is young. We're now going to move on to each of the conferences in turn then. And the conference season, in terms of the main parties at least, began with Labour. But of course it began before Labour even started, with the Tom Watson non-resignation. And that really, for me, set the tone for the entire week. Marie, what do you think Labour came out with in terms of their conference season?
I think it was actually quite an odd one of... I can't remember who it was, but someone pointed out at the end of it that basically Labour conference had been weird because there was always something happening elsewhere in people's minds, even the people who were there were always elsewhere. So, you know, obviously at first there was the...
I think it was me that said that, incidentally. So I'm glad that you can remember.
Yeah, I listened to you sometimes. I listened to what you say. I don't remember that it was you who said it. I'm just going to nick your take now. So you had the attempted coup on Tom Watson just before Labour conference. The first sort of like day-ish was basically talked. spend talking about that. And then obviously the Supreme Court stuff happened. So like, there was no point at which I think people at Labour conference were really talking about Labour conference, if that makes sense. And even Jeremy Corbyn's speech, I think, was quite interesting because while it was happening, you had a lot of people, a lot of Labour supporters saying, you know, actually, this is great, coming out with lots of genuinely really good policies, etc. So there was a bit of like kind of discourse around the speech while the speech was physically happening. And then about half an hour after it ended, everyone had forgotten about the speech and it was never heard from again. So it was a slightly odd conference in that sense. It kind of, it felt quite passive. So I think, so I've been going to conferences since 2015. And every Labour conference I've been to has been actively something. So it's been actively fractured. It's been actively like terrible or sad or angry or whatever. It's always been something. Whereas this is like the first passive Labour conference I feel I've gone to, where it sort of happened at us as opposed to, you know, kind of really being there.
For me, the 2015 Labour conference is the one that I always remember because it was the one where Jeremy Corbyn had just taken over. But most of the people and the delegates at the conference were part of the old guard. And it was a bit like going to a dinner party where a couple had were on the verge of divorcing. And so you could hear the argument they were having in the kitchen, and then they come in and sit down at the table and say, it's fine, everything's fine. Why is that a problem? Nothing's really met that height. Alex, as someone observing these things from the outside, and by that I mean someone that's not forced to go to these things for work, how did you view the Labour conference?
I didn't understand. Well, I think the point about other things happening, that I don't think it really cut through much because there were these larger political events happening. All I sort of saw was that people saying that it had gone badly, but I didn't quite understand why it had gone. I mean, obviously the Tom Watson thing at the beginning wasn't ideal, but I don't really understand why it was considered to be a bad one.
Well, I think wasn't the idea that I think, especially like we know an election is coming, and obviously the Labour line is that Labour can probably, so if not win, but at least sort of like form a coalition after that election. And the idea is that, you know, like especially the conference, I think, before a general election, you're meant to have, I think, so all the activists are meant to be there and you're meant to be talking about this policy and when we're in government, you know, this will happen and X and Y and Z. And that didn't quite feel like that. Then again, I never went to the conference hall because that's boring. But
and of course, we had the Supreme Court judgment towards the end, which produced cheers of delusion and excitement from the crowds. The problem was no one then really knew what it meant, and so I spoke to one Labour activist and I said, "What's happened?" And she said, "We've won, we've won." I said, "Well, won what?" She said, "We've won the Supreme Court." And I said, "Okay, and what happens now?" And she said, "Well, Parliament can't be prorogued." I said, "Yes, and what happens now?" And she said, "Well, we've won." Got a bit confused then. The polling on this is actually quite interesting. And by quite interesting, I mean quite interesting to me. In the old days, back sort of 20 years ago, they never used to do polling during the conferences because it was thought to be unfair that one particular party would get their moment in the sun and they'd have... They'd have polling that week, but not the other weeks. Now, of course, when we poll all the time, after each conference, you can see the bounce that the parties get. Now, the Lib Dems, after their conference, and of course, the major announcement there was just abandoning the second referendum position. After their conference, they actually got a boost in the polls. Labour and Conservative doesn't seem to have moved that much. Are conferences becoming less important, do you think?
I don't think they're ever important.
Is it possible to get any less important than not important at
but
all?
I think it's one of those that one of the kind of set pieces in politics that's important but not important because of its direct impact on the public. So it's important to, I think, party management in terms of... So I've talked to a lot, and I'm sure you've had those chats as well, but party conferences, for example, is quite good for MPs because, you know, they get to see what their leadership thinks, you know, how the past year has gone, what they want to do in the future, and kind of talk to, obviously, to their colleagues, activists, etc. You get the mood of your own party and so on. You get to meet journalists as well, like from the journalistic perspective. It's just quite a nice place to go so you can make new contacts and kind of talk to new people and, again, kind of get the vibe of a party and see if there's kind of like a low grumble about some policy, about some person on the front bench, etc. But I don't think it's ever been something that's been for the public, really, and I'm not sure, you know, that's kind of a new thing of the public not caring about conferences, because why would they? I think actually what was quite interesting about, I know we're going to come to Tory conference in a bit, but so Labour, like the leader speech did have quite a lot of policies. Tories, that Boris Johnson didn't really announce any policies, which was kind of weird. It was one of those that you didn't quite notice until he was done. It was like, oh, Oh, that was that. Well, normally that's the thing. Like the one thing that's public facing, I think, in terms of conferences, is saying, well, you know, we'll do X and Y and Z. And even that, you know, they didn't really do.
So, but he cracked nuclear fusions. That was pretty good, didn't he? That was pretty exciting to just look at a conference speech. And I thought it was going to take another 20 years and 50 billion quid, but apparently he's cracked it. So that's good.
Let's move on to the Conservative shit show. It was an interesting week. For me, a lot of the stuff was, shall we say, overtaken to some extent by Boris Johnson and his technology lessons. This sort of cast.
I believe it was one-on-one technology lessons.
Yes, one-on-one technology lessons. This is of course the story that Boris Johnson was friends with entrepreneur, model, and pole dancer Jennifer Akuri.
I want to say Akuri.
Would anyone in the audience like to pass judgment on the pronunciation? No. So Jennifer, she was visited by Boris Johnson for one-on-one technology lessons at various points back in 2012, I believe. The Mirror, Daily Mirror, has reported that friends have claimed Miss Akuri told them she did have an affair with Mr. Johnson, and they first got together in a New York hotel. Boris Johnson denies these allegations vehemently. Actually, not vehemently. Does he deny them? Who knows? He certainly denies them for legal reasons. But the 34-year-old has now said that the pair's relationship was never sexual. She told the Daily Mirror, "Men just trip over themselves in front of me. They fall in love in about 10 minutes because I know what to say. I make men trip over their dicks. That's what happens. They go insane around me. They've been doing it for years. It's just what happens." And she branded rumours of an affair with Boris Johnson as complete bullshit. So that's such a statement. You don't see that in press conferences, do you? And also, how do men trip over their dicks?
Yeah. I was waiting till we circle back on that. I was like, we've buried the lead on that sentence, I feel.
That's remarkable. Alex...
That's a real humble brag. I feel like, well, I'm a bit dyspraxic, but there's really something to trip over... down there.
Alex, would you want to be Prime Minister?
No, it's horrible. It's a horrible job.
Do you think all that opportunity for leadership and making changes, that you think that would just be wasted on you?
Well, just like, I don't know, it used to be good being a leader, but I think like being a king was good. But like being a Prime Minister is sort of rubbish. Like they I don't know. There's always that example with like music. If like 500 years ago, if you're a king and you want to hear a piece of music, you have to like clap your hands. Someone has to like physically play that instrument, and then they might be executed if they get the wrong note. Whereas like now, if you're a prime minister and you just say that you like a band, 90% chance that band goes on Twitter and calls you a right. So it's just like, which you'll have to bleep that in the edit.
We didn't brief Alex on right. on that.
So you used to be able to murder people, and now you're not allowed to like their music. Right, that's the level of like. I'm not saying like bring back deference, but it must be annoying. It must be annoying if you were Prime Minister.
If I were Prime Minister, I would want to clap my hands and have John Pino arrive and sing Brown Eyed Girl at me, which I think would be as moving as it is beautiful. But Marie, the Conservative conference, of course, was overshadowed by the fact that Parliament was still in session. But for me, it didn't feel much different. The fact that supposedly the MPs weren't there. I mean, I still saw a lot of MPs at conference. Mm.
So I think that was really interesting because they were quite clever in how they went about it. They were clearly very scared that Tory conference would look empty and that, you know, most MPs would be in London. So what they did, and I chatted to people like that, is apparently genuinely what happened. So mostly ministers, but also all MPs, were told by up high, say, okay, if you're coming to conference, you're not fucking spending it in your suite. We want you walking around basically at all times, meeting members, shaking hands, talking to people. And actually, you know, and that's kind of, I ended up mentioning that in the piece I wrote about conference, but it did. I think on the first day you were like, oh, actually, yeah, there's lots of MPs here. And I feel like everywhere I walk, I just see, you know, some MPs walking around, talking to members, etc. But the second or third day, it did feel like a sort of like glitch in the matrix of wherever you went, you could turn around and James Cleverly was there.
James Cleverly was everywhere.
Wasn't he?
It was remarkable.
Were you just sitting there like in the Truman Show, just like looking at the back of your car mirror, just like...
but yeah, so I think that basically, and that was quite a clever thing for them to do of saying, okay, if you're here, just show your face at all times, that we do not want you ever in private, just kind of walk around until you can walk no more. But no, I don't know. I thought it was, I was expecting it. So I think it's the thing as well, it's kind of politics is all about expectations, kind of toying with expectations. But my bar was very low and my expectations were very low, I think, for Tory Conference. I thought it was genuinely going to be a bunch of journalists and a bunch of lobbyists in the room with like four spads crying. And it wasn't, in actual fact,
there were only three spads crying, which is quite a performance.
And it wasn't that. And I think it looked quite lively. What I found quite interesting was the sheer amount of young men there. So again, this is my fifth Roy conference, but genuinely, so it was quite incredible. Like at the Midland, the main hotel bar, what was it, on the second night? So I'd been to some party. I went back to the hotel bar at sort of like 12:30.
Which is standard behaviour at conference.
Oh yeah.
For everyone, not just for Marie.
All right. And then, I felt like I was just confronted by this wall of men. Bye.
we've lost one audience member already. For those of you in the audience... he's coming back.
Fine.
So we hear. For those of you in the audience, actually, I'd like to make it clear we're not actually sponsored by McDonald's, despite the fact that Marie is doing her best.
I'm not a morning person. I had to be here before 10 a.m. McMuffins.
Where were we? Anyway, we'll edit all this out.
I was trying to make a serious political point and you interrupted, so... No, but I think like, it was just, yeah, there were so many young men. And like, so build, if you kind of try and think of like the least, the least likable version of a young Tory you can think of, like those, there's just so many of them everywhere. So singing Rule Britannia and smoking huge cigars. And being
a pipe. I saw a 17-year-old smoking a pipe.
So like so many of those, and genuinely unclear where they came from, because there's normally not that many of them at Tory Conference. And yeah, and suddenly, I don't know if you noticed that as well, Joe, but like just so many of them. And actually on a slight grim note as well, I've heard so many stories that nothing that properly horrible, but I've heard quite a lot of like quite grim stories of like women and young men actually getting sort of like gross flirted with and gross like approached in the conference bars this year, which again doesn't normally happen to that extent. So the vibe was really masculine, like even more so. Now you can imagine like where the bar is normally for Tory Party Conference, but it felt even more like masculine than it usually does.
What surprised me was how upbeat so many of the activists were. I mean, they really seemed enthusiastic, and for them it was as if they had got their man. Finally, Boris was going to be giving the leader's speech that he was born to deliver, and there was a lot of enthusiasm about that. And I believe people were queuing up at 6:30 for the 6:30 in the morning for a speech that started at 11:30, so they could bear the front line for that. It was quite an incredible thing. Alex, have you ever been to party conference?
No, I wouldn't. I wouldn't go to that one as my starter.
To break your conference virginity.
First has to be special. I don't think it's going to be a Boris Johnson Tory party leadership.
I'd go for the DUP if I were you.
Oh yeah,
I understand that. That's
it's
very
got extreme first
very
time.
Special.
Yeah, yeah, yes,
very
please.
Very special.
The vermicelli thing I can't get over. Didn't he talk about Wi-Fi as being like little vermicelli noodles going into your house? And then he was like, oh, there'll be light speed communication. I'm like, that's what it is, isn't it? Like,
as a stand up, as a professional comedian, are you a professional comedian?
As an emotionally
professional comedian. When you look at Boris Johnson's performance on stage, do you pick up things that he's sort of stolen from the world of stand-up, or do you think he's effectively just winging it?
That Jeremy Vine thing all about him, like that his whole act is like a very conscious, willful failure each time, right? So like, there's that, you know, if comedy is like that is failure, then he's like got that it's funnier him constantly fucking up jokes than doing them properly, and it's like a meta routine in that sense. But I don't want to credit him with having successfully taken good stuff from comedy.
For those of you not familiar, the Jeremy Vine story is well worth reading. It recounts Jeremy Vine on two separate occasions going to an event with Boris Johnson, him turning up at the very last minute and then just scribbling notes down and appearing to wing his performance, but in actual fact telling exactly the same two jokes, one about Jaws and one about George Jones, I think. Anyway, well worth checking out.
It's like the political equivalent of like a comedy fan seeing their second ever comedy gig, being like, "What? But you said that you met them that day the first time." I saw, like, it's that kind of like, no.
Certainly, when Bruce Forsyth would turn up and say that the audience was so much better than last week, there were times when I doubted that that was true.
As, the exponential curve,
as a youngster. Obviously, the discussion at both Labour and Conservative conferences about the upcoming election and who's going to win. The Conservatives seemed very upbeat in terms of they thought they would at worst be the largest party in a hung parliament, but at best get a stuffing majority. And Labour seemed less excited, but still thought they were on for a small majority, but perhaps leading a coalition. We'll just edit out that whole pause and the nose blowing. Marie, what do you think the outcome of the next election could be? I'm just going to put you on what many regard as the spot.
So the thing is, I called so many things wrong in such a short period of time in 2015 and 2016 that I've entirely retired from predictions. I do not predict anything anymore.
But and you never will.
But I'm genuinely not sure, because I think there's a certain cockiness from Labour kind of looking at the polls and saying, well, you know, they're not looking great, but actually in 2017 the polls didn't look great for us, and you know, and we performed a lot better than we did. But I'm not sure. Like, I think that was the result of a few sort of like that was the result of effectively like a few things and a few different factors that I do not think Labour can actually recreate in an election. So in 2019 against Boris Johnson, with Brexit where it's at right now. So I'm not really sure. It does look like the Tories would still be, I think, the largest party. And also, it seems fair to say, regardless of how you feel about him, that Boris Johnson is better at campaigning than Theresa May, partly because that bar is just so low. I mean, I can see, because the polls, and it's been quite weird, actually, I think, looking at the distance between the bubble and the country of within the bubble, it has felt that, you know, it's been a terrible time for Boris, that he's lost every single vote he's had in the Commons is becoming Prime Minister, which genuinely brings so much joy to my heart. And, you know, it's kind of generally going quite terribly for him. But at the same time, the Tories have had a consistent lead in the polls over Labour for quite a long time now. And as you said, the polls are now quite stable, so...
Yeah, we'll come on to the polls in a second. But Alex, what do you think the outcome will be?
Well, isn't a big difference that like Corbyn's own personals are quite a lot worse than they were before that... they weren't good before that 2017 election, but they are quite a lot worse now, his own personal ratings, aren't they? But on the other hand, isn't there some study saying that basically people are pretty good at tactical voting at the moment because Tories are full fat Brexit, the Brexit party have gone down, but when the election comes, probably enough Lib Dems will hold their noses and shift in the right constituencies that maybe there'll just be another hung parliament.
Well, we do get a varied picture on this in terms of the polling. Boris Johnson definitely polls consistently above Jeremy Corbyn in terms of his personal ratings. Boris Johnson has always had very good personal ratings compared to other politicians. And though his ratings have taken a bit of a knock in recent weeks, he still is well above Jeremy Corbyn. Also, when you ask the public who would be best to lead the country on the question of the economy, a combination of Boris Johnson and Sajid Javid is well ahead of Jeremy Corbyn and John McDonnell. And it's never been the case that a party has come from behind on the leader ratings and that economic question to get the largest number of votes. But these are not normal times, of course. As Marie pointed out, the Conservatives have had a consistent lead in the polls. But, of course, it's not about share of the vote as much as it is about seats. And the question of seats is an interesting one, which takes us on to Brexit. We went almost half an hour without specifically talking about Brexit, which I think is certainly a record in my private life. We're in a strange situation. There are reports today that that a delay could be on the cards, and Boris Johnson, despite offering to die in a ditch and have his legs cut off, although he wasn't clear on the order at which that would happen, he said that a delay would not be happening. Do you think he can survive a delay?
That's a really interesting question, I think. So the first thing being that if he does ask for a delay, I will probably laugh myself to death. So I will not be around to see if he can survive it or not. But no, seriously, I'm not entirely sure. And I think that's the conversation a lot of Conservatives are having at the moment, from anywhere from activists to the cabinet, of saying, you know, can Boris Johnson get away with a delay? Because Theresa May, I think, was slightly different in the sense that obviously she'd been a Remainer. So there was that issue of lack of trust. So a lot of people thinking, oh, well, you know, she just wants to cancel Brexit because she didn't want it anyway. And the question is, actually, now we do have a Brexiteer Prime Minister who keeps talking about how much he wants to leave. The idea of, like, you know, can he get away with saying, listen, like, you know, we really are doing this. Like, this is actually happening. It's just like a bump in the road, but we'll definitely leave in 3 months. Like, how can he get away with it? I don't know, but I think, yeah, clearly. I can't remember who, there was a really good piece, James Forsyth, I think, maybe in the Sun or the Spec, but on the different clans. Oh, no, it was on BuzzFeed, actually, sorry. On the different clans of Tories, basically the ones who think Boris could definitely survive a delay, the ones who think that Boris could maybe just about weather a delay, and the ones who think he really should not, that should not happen. And that's kind of the split we're seeing, I think, especially among the Parliamentary Conservative Party at the moment.
Well, at the Conservative Conference, everywhere you looked, there were hashtag get Brexit done slogans. That's an interesting one, because the polls do show that a sizable majority of British people do agree with the statement they want to get Brexit done, when you just ask it as an agree-disagree question. But when you look at things in more complicated terms and you give people the choice to choose between getting Brexit over and done with as soon as possible and getting your preferred Brexit outcome, even if that took a long time, 71% of Leave supporters and 65% of Remain supporters choose their preferred outcome over a swift conclusion. So it's essentially people calling for get Brexit done, but get my version of Brexit done as soon as possible. And even when you look at that, then it's unclear exactly how emotionally engaged people are in this. They may have turned off, but they may switch back on again when a delay, as it now looks like, most likely takes place. So it could all change, and it's a nice big mess. And then, of course, speaking of messes, there's one of my famous segues. We have the issue of the Irish border. Alex, would you like to make some jokes about the Irish border?
Hey, when you got a problem, why not make it 10 kilometres wider and engulf all of Derry? Just looks like a lobster, doesn't it? That's the only aesthetically, it looks like a lobster. That's the only the little proposal. It's not funny, really, is it? It's I don't.
It's like that. You tried.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting one. And of course, Labour have their neutral position on Brexit, which was confirmed at the conference. Jeremy Corbyn will remain neutral. See, they're going to laugh. Jeremy Corbyn will remain neutral, but the party will then campaign for a good deal and then put that to the vote with Remain or not.
So I will... I don't know, maybe controversially, I will defend Labour on this, and then actually in Willy the Lib Dems as well. So I think something I've personally found really frustrating over the past few months has been somehow, and it's mostly come from the same people as well. You've got people who said, oh, well, you know, the Lib Dems contract's back revoked. Like, you know, that's just too, like, that's too big a thing, and it's actually more complex. How could you just give something so simplistic? And then they turn around, they're like, well, Labour's position is too complex. Like, you know, you need to have something straightforward. Like, you can't have both these positions. I think saying, listen, we didn't really want Brexit. We're going to go to Brussels. We're going to negotiate the best possible deal we can. And then once that's done, we're going to ask you and say, okay, listen, do you want this? Or should we actually just forget this will happen and remain? I don't think that's a dumb position to
take. And of course, there's the idea that voting for a second referendum is not about voting for Remain. I mean, there are very few people, I imagine, supporting a second referendum simply because they're massive fans of participatory democracy and really revel in the opportunity to do it all again. And it does, at least for the time being, at least in the polls at the moment, does appear to be giving a benefit to the Lib Dems. We'll have to see how long it lasts, though. Alex, what do you think?
What about the entire issue of Brexit?
Yes.
Good or bad?
Or British politics generally. Or we could go back to the Portuguese election.
Absolutely not. I feel like a second referendum question with just a Labour negotiated, slightly softer deal and Remain isn't really... It doesn't really give enough of a range of possible outcomes, given that there was initially a... I think you would need something harder potentially on the ballot if you were doing, if, yeah.
And then, of course, you have the problem that if you put Remain, a deal, whatever that is, a no deal on the ballot, you could have a situation where Remain, as its current polling shows, gets 40% of the vote, and then the other two options get 30% each. And then what do you do then? Do you say, well, Remain won? Sort of. Gets very complicated. Guys, thank you very much. We're now going to play a game, which as many of you who have come to our live performances before will be familiar with. It's called Play Your Family Fortunes Right. And for this, I'm going to need two volunteers from the audience. But before you all put your hands up, the good news is the winning team will win a copy of Sex, Lies and Politics, which Marie is now going to hold up because I can't. Alex is going to hold up. Thank you. Marie, holding up Sex, Lies and Politics. This is the new book, 50 chapters looking at interesting aspects of British politics, only one of which I wrote and another of which I ghostwrote. So it really is great. Marie and I will, and perhaps even Alex, will sign it for you for the winning team. So can we have two volunteers from the audience, please? We've got one woman. Oh, okay. These two here. Please come up to the front. Have a round of applause for these two. Okay. Right, guys. You sit either side there. We're going to need extra microphones. So pause this for a bit.
So, to be clear, Joe has not told us what this entails, so we have no idea what's going on either.
Wait, sit down. Right. The way it's going to work is that I am going to read out a particular statement, and you, the contestants, are going to have to guess what percentage of the population selected agree for that statement. And at the same time, someone's going to keep. Nick is going to keep score on his producer. Nick is going to keep score on his mobile, and I'm going to play the role of Bruce Forsyth in this particular context. So, sir, can I ask you your name?
Andy.
Andy, where are you from?
South London.
South London.
Yes.
Well, that's London.
Further than I was expecting, actually. and what do you do?
I am a tech manager for a film company.
Oh, that sounds actually quite interesting. And have you bought the previous two versions, volumes of Sex, Lies and the
Politics? I have not, sorry. I'm too busy reading Marie's book.
No need to apologise. Hopefully you can win
Checks in the post.
So you're on the team with Alex, which we're going to characterise the boys. But don't worry, we'll characterise these the not boys in the interests of equality.
Can we be the lads?
Oh, I like that. Yeah, we'll be
okay,
the lads.
Okay, you can be the boys and the lads, because that won't get confusing at all. Madam, can I ask you your name?
I'm Ellie.
Ellie, where are you from?
Also from South London.
Right. Have you travelled up together?
Yes.
I feel like Bruce Forsyth. Are you a couple?
Yeah.
We are.
Oh, right. So either way, the household gets a copy of Sex. Right, we don't want any conferring on this. So let me give you an example of how this is going to work, and I'm going to have to sit over here. So let's imagine that the statement was the UK should withdraw completely from the European Union. Now, what percentage of people do you think would agree with that?
May I ask, are we allowed to know when these statements were made?
Well, that's what makes it in many ways more exciting. So.
Or hard.
The field work for this was conducted back in 2012. Now, this, so don't look at me in that tone of voice. Don't worry. It's fine. Because a lot of the questions are not time sensitive. It's just this particular one that I'm only going to do as an example. So I would say the UK would withdraw completely from the European Union. Sorry, what was your name?
Andy.
Andy and Alex. That's going to get confusing. So Andy, what would you say? And you can turn to Alex for support.
I think
if only emotional
support.
He's a barely
informed comedian. I don't want his data.
Wisdom of crowds and stuff. I think this was probably quite low in 2012 because it was never that much of an issue historically in polling. So I would say you're probably looking at like UKIP election share in European elections. So maybe like 22%?
22% say the boys and the lads. Now, you just need to say whether you think the number is higher or lower.
Higher or lower than... I think a bit higher. The lads are going to go higher.
The lads are going to say higher. And what does the audience say? Higher or lower?
Oh,
It's a good game, good game. the actual figure was 55%.
What?
So that means that the lads get the points, and what do points make? Well, a book. I mean, I think we've already defined that.
55.
Are we going to argue about every result?
That's just loads.
Well, yeah. Fortunately, we do have all day. okay. So we're now going to start popping. You're going to alternate who goes first. So I'm going to turn to the lads now.
Good choice.
The lads, and the question is: generally speaking, most British people could be trusted. Sorry, can be trusted. Generally speaking, most British people can be trusted. Lads, what do you think? This is a podcast. There's no point whispering.
Let's confer online.
We were doing secret.
Yeah. No,
it's a lad thing.
Well, they only need to say higher or lower. So
Is this still 2012?
Yes, this is all 2012. Okay. Do you think people trusted less in 2012 now or more?
Interesting dynamic. I reckon they trusted more, I think.
Yeah, I agree. Also, I think it'd be quite high.
Nice to guess public opinion. Research opinion. Nice.
Percentage-wise, maybe.
Any lies in today, am I right?
70?
I'd say 70.
Okay, I'm going to have to hurry you because I'm now bored.
We would like to go with 70, please.
So, the lads are saying 70. What are the boys saying?
I think it's a bit higher than that. I think people sort of intrinsically are quite positive about their fellow man and will say...
So you're saying
plus
higher?
Plus nationalism, yeah.
What did you say?
70.
70%. What do the audience think? Higher or lower than 70?
Can't we not just say, we agree? What if they also think 70?
Well, if it is 70, you get 2 points.
What
do points make? Yeah, we're really dying on the enthusiasm there. The actual figure, 68%.
Oh, high five!
So Nick is making a note of that. So that's 1 point to 1 point to the lads. We're now onto the boys. And the question was: I am lucky to live in Britain. I am lucky to live in Britain. What do you think, Adam or Andy or Aaron or whatever other name beginning with A you have?
Aristotle.
I might go with Aaron. I mean, generally, I think, again, that would be relatively high. Do you take away from your gammon vote who wants to live in Spain?
But what are they... So the lucky is the word that I find worrying there, because they'd be like, no, I worked hard to be born in Britain. Like, there's that that kind of intrinsic arrogance of,
ladies and gentlemen, a left-wing rant from a comedian. Yeah.
I think high-ish.
Yeah.
I'm afraid high-ish 70, is not...
75?
High-ish 0.3.
75. I'm going to take that as your final answer. Yeah. The lads, higher or lower than 75?
I think lower.
I'd say lower.
Yeah, we're going to go lower.
Audience? The actual answer, 82%.
Yeah.
So this is...
Britain's not that great.
Yeah, it's good stuff.
It's now, only an okay country, let's be honest.
Onto the lads. I have good taste. I have good taste. Now, that's not sort of me, Joe Twyman, has good taste.
No,
because that's well documented. But what do you think? The percentage of people that said, I have good taste.
I think most people are really arrogant.
Really?
Yeah.
And what would you say?
Percentage-wise, it's a cop-out to go with 70 again, isn't it? Maybe like 60.
I'd say, yeah.
Maybe
I'd
like 55.
65?
Yeah, let's go 65.
65, say the lads. What about the boys?
I definitely think that's higher. I think people really think they're
No one's like that survey question is like, am I a piece of shit? Yes or no?
what does the audience think? Higher or lower? The actual figure, 92%.
Yes!
92% of people think they have good taste. So that's
Doris from Cleethorpes thinks she's on fleek.
Yeah. So that's good. So another point for Nick's recording that. I can't even remember who won that. Back now to the boys. I have a good sense of humour. So variation on that.
100% of men, I think.
Yeah. I think...
Do you have a good sense of humour, Alex?
I'm going to be trying to plug my show later. So obviously, I think like high... But not quite as high as, because I think some people, I don't think as high as 92.
No, probably not. But yeah, 76. Quite high. Maybe even 80. I think people sort of intrinsically think, oh, well, you know, I get jokes, I watch things that are funny, even if it is like old Roy Chubby Brown videos, and they really probably shouldn't.
Right. What are we saying?
80.
And,
definitely going higher, right?
And the lads?
People are right. People always think they're funnier than they are.
That's true, but also I no longer trust my judgment.
As this podcast demonstrates on a regular basis. You're saying higher?
I'm going to go with your...
Yeah, let's go higher.
What do the audience think? Higher or lower? True figure, 95%. So 5% of people say, yeah, sorry. I don't have a good sense of humour. I am not funny and borderline racist. So, next one. Next one, over to the lads. The singer Elvis Presley is still alive. The singer Elvis Presley is still alive. Remember 2012? So, you know, he couldn't have died of old age by then. The singer Elvis Presley is still alive.
I was about to Google that, yeah.
I think a depressing amount, it'll be like maybe like 5 to 10% will think it.
Ooh, I...
Do you think more? Not more.
I was going to say 15. No, well, I think so it's
someone
be
in the audience says yes.
Let's go 12, because it's from 2012.
Nice, 12%.
Okay, 12. 12%, what do the boys think? Higher or lower?
Also, it's not just conspiracy theory people, right? Because sometimes, it couldn't it be like, because for me, I'm always like, oh, David Attenborough's still alive. Like, there's always that like, oh yeah, that like, some of it might just be like, they don't know that he's dead.
I think that's, it's a, not bit, just that's conspiracy. A bit of a stretch.
I think a few percent. I think three of those percent, if you did a follow-up, be like...
thinking, I've heard him on the radio, he must be alive. I don't think that's how it works.
Every time someone famous starts, like one in five times, I'm like, oh, I thought you were dead already, right? Like...
Okay.
I mean, I think you've got. I think we've got to start off with like a 10% baseline. Who think he was like a lizard person who is probably regestated by now? So.
So what do you think?
So
higher
they
or
said,
lower?
They said. What did they say? 12.
12.
Yeah. 12. What are you saying? Higher or lower?
Lower.
It's all right. We have got all day.
Lower.
Lower.
Lower. What do the audience think? Higher. True figure. 2%.
Yes.
Okay. So we're just going to do. How many have we done now?
Five.
Okay. So
who's winning?
They are.
Oh, what?
We're going to do a variation on that now. To the boys, American astronauts landed on the moon in 1969.
Oh, this will just be depressing.
So, how many believe that?
So, this is how many people?
How many believe that American astronauts landed on the moon in 1969?
I believe that it happened, but I do think it is the best. It's one of the only conspiracy theories that intuitively makes more sense than the actual thing. It makes more sense to me that it was faked than it actually happened because it's so incredibly. I still believe that it happened, but intuitively it feels more. Anyway,
have you? Can I just interrupt very quickly? Genuinely, my favorite website ever is JFK is trapped in the moon.com. Which argues that, yeah, JFK never died. He just got trapped in the moon.
I'm going to need a percentage from you very quickly.
like high 60s or
yeah,
high 70s?
High 60s is where I think it
high
is.
High 60s, so high or lower, lads.
68.
What do you think?
They're saying 60.
68.
High or lower than 68.
Should we go slightly lower, maybe? I feel like it...
Yeah, feel like it's, yeah, fine.
We'll go lower.
A little bit lower.
Lower? A little bit lower. Audience?
A little bit.
89%. So just two questions remaining to see who wins the book. The first of these is to the lads. Margaret Thatcher is the best prime minister this country has had since the Second World War. Remember, 2012.
Me.
Margaret Thatcher is the best prime minister this country has had since the Second World War.
Oh God.
Gonna need a percentage from you.
What do you think?
27?
Yeah, 27.
27. 27, say the lads. The boys say.
Are they aware that they can say Churchill?
It's just agreement or disagreement.
Okay.
Just agreement. Margaret Thatcher is the best prime minister this country's had since.
I think it's going to be higher. Who else are people going to... At 2012 in particular as well, it's sort of like the low point of Blair's popularity and things like that. So I think...
I'll stop using knowledge.
But all the Attlee stans are going to hate Thatcher anyway. Like, it's not... There's no...
All the Attlee fans. All the Attlee fans. Those people with the Attlee tattoos, wearing the Attlee hats.
Hey, if I had to get a tattoo...
Higher or lower?
You said 27.
Higher than 27. Audience?
Higher. 36.
And then the last question to the boys. Tony Blair is the best prime minister this country has had since the Second World War. in 2012, the percentage of people that agree with that?
I think it's going to be lower.
Well, it's going to be lower than that.
In 2012, everyone hated him in 2012.
18.
Yeah, something like that. That sounds about right.
17? Should we go 17?
18. Remember, you can still pull level if you get it exactly right. Team that aren't answering. So no, you can't.
They could give a.
So what? What do you think? You think 18? You think 18?
So we can go 17.
Sure. I was going to go higher. But we'll go with you.
No,
I'd rather you're wrong than I'm wrong.
So. Well, I mean, I'm going to get the book anyway because we live together. So yeah, we'll go lower then. At least if we're wrong, that's
we're
my
going
fault.
One of the two.
Okay. I hope this doesn't create marital strife. The actual answer is 19%. So very close. So well done. Good game. Nick, the final scores, please.
I've not awarded a point for that last one because I don't know what you want.
No, we said higher.
What's the score?
Well, you still lost.
Hang on, we're going to hand over to Nick because I can't read what's on his phone.
We won the test question, if we remember. So it's actually level.
Well, I didn't count
yet
that.
Again, the Patreon.
No, should be.
Nick didn't count.
I love it.
Up.
We set the bar and then we don't get that point.
Nick, our producer, when asked to do a relatively simple task.
On this podcast about data,
what does that mean?
Can we just ask the audience how they vibe 2-1? Like, what was your? Sorry, what did you okay. reckon?
Oh, was it 5-3?
The final. Let's pretend none of that happened. Ladies and gentlemen, the final results are 5 points for the boys, 3 points for the lads.
Woo!
So, congratulations, Adam, Andy, Alex, Aaron. The book is yours, or indeed theirs. Thank you. Thanks to everyone for putting up with us here at Podcast Live. I'm Joe Twyman. This is Marie Leconte. Alex, give us a plug for your show.
I'm 15th of February. For any of those Valentine's lovers out there, I'm doing my Edinburgh show from last year again at the Vault Festival, I think 9 p.m. Tickets are not on sale yet because it's so far in advance. So just put it in your calendar and then sort of Google intermittently over the next 6 months. It's about emotion and rationality in politics, about how we're emotional, not rational. Yay.
Brilliant. Thank you. Thank you very much. Please like, subscribe, and leave a review for our podcast if you've enjoyed today. Thank you. Please remember to like, subscribe, review, all these different things that help people hear about us, and do tell all of your friends and many of the people that you don't know, even if you haven't enjoyed the podcast. This is a Poddo podcast produced by Nick Hilton, and our theme tune is by Joe Button.
For more details, go to podopods.com, and for sales and advertising, email nick@podopods.com.
And yes, that's spelled podopods.com.